injury lawyers Mike Riley and John Walsh.
John and I approach personal injury cases in the same way. We want to be certain that our clients are treated fairly, that our clients are comfortable, that our clients know they can trust us to get the best result for them.
It's our professional responsibility to make certain you are fairly and fully compensated. Most of our cases are settled without a trial.
Call injury lawyers Mike Riley and John Walsh at 257-5661 for the personal attention you deserve.
Oh, Alabama. The devil fools with the best laid plan. Swing low, Alabama. You got the space.
Okay, enough of that. I could listen to that whole song because it's so good.
It's a beautiful song, and unfortunately, you couldn't play Sweet Home Alabama today.
Well, maybe we'll work that in later. Although I've been, by the way, John Nichols from the Capital Times and the Nation with us at slysoffice.com. Have you been reading in the Rolling Stone about what took place before they all got on that plane 40 years ago?
Oh, it's, yeah.
Ron Van Sant basically made them get on that plane. He said, if we're going to die, we're going to die. Nobody wanted to get on that plane.
You know, look, at some point, they're going to, you know, like Hammer of the Gods, the Led Zeppelin book,
uh-huh.
is an incredible rock and roll book. Keith Richards' book, an incredible rock and roll book. No question about that. But I will promise you, the full book on Lynyrd Skynyrd, that's going to be the one. I mean, it's just epic, everything. And it wasn't one crash.
No, there have been flames coming out of the propellers there for a long time. Artemis Pyle, who's fighting with them legally right now to release a book, said that, in fact, that the airplane looked like the Clampets owned it. So there you go. All right.
They were a working-class band. But, you know, they become relevant to our conversation today because the reality that Alabama has something of a history in our national discourse as regards states that may be a little awry.
Well, let's just look at what's happened. Former House Speaker Mike Huppert in prison. Robert Bentley, governor, resigned in disgrace for using state resources to cover an affair with his chief of staff. And now, of course, Luther Strange, he really is leaving in disgrace because he basically covered for Robert Bentley. And now Roy Moore is being accused of being a pedophile. So,
although just to be clear, before all that stuff, you know, before all the things about other people you listed and the current charges on Roy Moore, he was a horrible person.
Yes.
Yeah, so it's not, you know what I mean? What's happening is we are certainly climbing the ladder of horribleness.
Well, let's
bow to remember he's always been.
Here's how the news started out yesterday on the NBC affiliate WSFA in Montgomery.
Say Roy Moore, then in his 30s, went on dates with them when they were underage.
Their stories told in an explosive article in the Washington Post.
One of the women says when she was 14, Moore took her out and initiated unwanted sexual contact. Roy Moore's campaign calls it fake news. Our Michael Downa, live with the new developments tonight. Michael?
Mark, it all stems from a Washington Post article released today, which alleges in his early 30s, Roy Moore went on dates and asked out at least four women under the age of 19, including a 14-year-old.
Much of the allegations against Roy Moore center on Lee Korfman, who said, as a then 14-year-old, she went out with a 32-year-old assistant district attorney by the name of Roy Moore. Korfman says on their second date, Moore made unwanted sexual contact with her. Korfman was one of four women in the Washington Post article who claimed that Moore asked them out while they were under the age of 19.
All right. And the details of that story in the Washington Post, which I am sure you read, make your skin crawl.
Yeah. I mean, I thought my skin was crawling as a parent of a 14-year-old right off the bat. Mm-hmm. I thought my skin was crawling pretty thoroughly upon reading the article. But then I didn't know nothing. I was a fool, right, to think that was the creepiest part of it. I obviously had not anticipated the response of Roy Moore's Republican colleagues.
Oh, well, you know, that's it's interesting you mention that. We'll have Nicole Wallace actually read those for you. Here we go. It sounds better coming from a woman.
But then there's the reaction from some Alabama officials. Daniel Dale, Washington correspondent for the Toronto Star, compiled some reactions to Moore from local Republican figures in Alabama. Among them, Marion County Republican Chair David Hall, who told Dale, quote, it was 40 years ago. I really don't see the relevance of it. He was 32. She was supposedly 14. She's not saying that anything happened other than they kissed. Not true. There was Geneva County Republican Chairman Riley Senbenner, who told Dale, quote, other than being with an underage person, he really didn't force himself. I know that's bad enough, but I don't know. If he withdraws, it's 5 weeks to the election. That would concede it to the Democrat. He later added that while he doesn't believe the allegations are true, if they are true, he won't support Moore. Still, he said, it's not forcible rape. He said it's not forcible rape. Wow. Adding, quote, I know that 14-year-olds don't make good decisions. Covington County Republican Chairman William Blocker tells Dale there is no option to support Doug Jones, the Democratic nominee. When you do that, you're supporting the entire Democratic Party. And State Auditor Jim Ziegler said, quote, take Joseph and Mary. Mary was a teenager and Joseph was an adult carpenter.
I thought it was more important that I thought it was more important a woman read that.
But you cut it off before the last three words.
Yeah, right. Well,
they parented Jesus.
Parented Jesus, yeah.
And the only reason I point that out is, you know, I'm certainly not going to question Mr. Ziegler's religion. People interpret things differently. But I always thought there was a little more to that.
Yeah, it's this angel called Gabriel.
Yeah, I just thought there was... There's just like some nuance there that was left out of the comparison of Roy Moore and the Nazarene.
Oh, God. It's just so unbelievable.
It's beyond comprehension.
Yeah. Yes, I accidentally cut the tape recording of that earlier. I thought she did a nice job reading those.
I thought she did a fantastic job of it. The delivery was great in that, but the material was really strong, I have to say. And, you know, it just kept going through the night after these Roy Moore revelations came out, where you had people saying, and literally Republicans in Alabama saying, well, you know, if it's between a child molester and giving the seat to a Democrat, you know, they're going to go with the Republican. And so you have this incredible example, if you will, of what's become of our politics. Because people do need to understand, I don't care how partisan or ideological anyone is, this was not the Republican Party 5 years ago. The Republican Party became increasingly right-wing, really abandoned almost all of its basic premises, certainly the basic premises of its founding, a number of years ago. There's no question of that. But, I mean, the Bushes, the Romneys, the McCains, all these folks, there were lines that they drew. And what's fascinating at this point is that I think those lines are being, literally as we speak, you know, in this 24 hours after the Moore revelations, they're being obliterated.
I often wonder what would happen today, George Herbert Walker Bush essentially saying if he lived in Louisiana, he would vote for Edwin Edwards over David Duke.
Right.
I often wonder what would have happened if David Duke had gotten the nomination to be governor in Louisiana right now.
Well, don't rule out the possibility.
Well, I won't. Here is Roy Moore talking about morality.
We have to return the knowledge of God and the Constitution of the United States to the United States Congress. I want to see virtue and morality returned to our country. And God is the only source of our law, liberty, and government. You know, our first president said that virtue and morality was a necessary spring of popular government. He said, who that is a sincere friend to it can look with indifference on attempts to shake the foundation of the fabric? Our foundation has been shaken. Crime, corruption, immorality, abortion, sodomy, sexual perversion sweep our land. When we become one nation under God again, when liberty and justice for all reigns across our land, we will be truly good again.
There is Roy Moore.
Yeah, and you know, he's of course famous for putting the Ten Commandments outside the court. And it was at the time I thought, well, that's an interesting move. You know, and there were some people who argued, well, you know, he was doing that in order to emphasize the biblical underpinnings and really the Judeo-Christian underpinnings that many people see for the Constitution, for the laws in the United States, somewhat neglecting the fact that Jefferson and others in that time...
Speak up just a little bit, John.
Yeah, but somewhat neglecting that Jefferson and others studied Islam and Hinduism and other religions. I mean, that wasn't just one. But, you know, okay, so Roy Moore's making his case, okay? I thought there was, you know, that there was some intellectual grounding to it. Now I realize he was just trying to remember the commandments because clearly some of them slipped his mind.
It is, it's not only repulsive, the local elected officials in some of the counties in Alabama. Now, Richard Shelby is not one of them, although he put a caveat on what he's saying. But the national media, Sean Hannity looks scared to death, and you can tell he knows he's really on thin ice with Roy Moore here. You can tell he kind of he's creeped out with this, but he just can't pull himself over to really take this seriously like he did with so many people in Hollywood.
Things like this. He was apparently like 32, and he dated one girl was 18. One girl was 17. They never said he did. There was no sexual. There was kissing involved. And then they're saying this one encounter
and
with
it was
a 14.
Consensual.
And consensual. That's true. And there's, you know, I don't know how you find out the truth.
He does understand that 14-year-olds can't consent, right?
Well, yeah, I assume he does. But what I find fascinating is that, again, this is sort of the zone that we've entered into. The defense is that he didn't violate every law, okay? and so you may say, well, you know, technically this codicil doesn't appear to have been violated. But is that really the standard for a U.S. senator? It's you know, Doug Jones, his opponent for the U.S. Senate in Alabama, says that whether he's elected to the Senate or not, the proudest thing he did in his life was bring to justice the people who did the Birmingham church bombing mm-hmm. in the early 1960s that killed four little girls. You know, so that's one guy. And the other guy is arguing that when he was quote-unquote, dating 14-year-olds as a guy in his mid-30s, he may not have violated some law.
Here is Steve Bannon.
But it's interesting. The Bezos, Amazon, Washington Post that dropped that dime on Donald Trump is the same Bezos, Amazon, Washington Post that dropped the dime this afternoon on Judge Roy Moore. Now, is that a coincidence? That's what I mean when I say opposition party, right? It's purely part of the apparatus of the Democratic Party. They don't make any bones about it.
So, Dan, I have... And one more clip for you. This is someone I know that you're a big, big, big fan of, Sebastian Gorka.
Absolutely, Sean. Look, this is America. We don't...
call people guilty before the evidence is in. And of course, the rhinos are going to use this as an excuse to attack somebody like Judge Roy Moore. But let's put this in context. Number one, what is the environment in which these charges are happening? Look at the last 2 years. Look at the insanity. Look at what we've all had to live through, the outrageous attacks on the president.
These people are really amazing, aren't they?
Yeah, I like, I almost detected a southern accent there. southern, you know, Hungary, I guess. But, so here's the interesting thing. I'm intrigued, because Bannon, I do believe, without a question, is the smartest person around the president by about 5 million miles. And it's very interesting the phrasing he used there. Dropped the dime, right? Do you realize, just to be clear here, the term drop the dime doesn't mean that you made something up. It means that you, you know, kind of ratted somebody
right?
out. You report. You
right?
Yeah. And it's very intriguing to me, the language that he chose to use there.
All right, we'll take a break here. John Nichols from the Capital Times and The Nation with us at slysoffice.com.
I want to thank all the labor unions here in Dane County that help keep slysoffice.com up and going so you keep up to date. Whether it be the Madison Firefighters, Local 311, or the Madison Teamsters, Local 695, or our friends at Madison Teachers Incorporated. These are some of the most active local unions who organize, and constantly stand up for workers. Thank you from slysoffice.com.
Hey, this is Sly for S&R Remodeling. Look, this time of year is a great time to call S&R Remodeling at 222-8044. Scott likes to keep his carpenters busy all winter long. You can probably get a better deal this time of year, and that would be great. Yep, they can remodel kitchens hassle-free. They'll get it done quickly and keep your house clean, and they are very respectful. Look, they have an A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau, and there's a reason for that. There's a lot of remodelers. They come and go. Scott's been around for 30 years. Here's their phone number at S&R Remodeling, 222-8044. Tell them Sly sent you. We're with John Nichols from the Capital Times and The Nation at slysoffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers. But before I get into what happened Tuesday night in Virginia, New York, Washington State, Maine, New Jersey, I want to ask you a little bit about this race in Alabama and whether you think that Doug Jones actually has a chance of defeating Roy Moore.
I felt that Doug Jones had a chance to defeat Roy Moore last summer. I've thought it for months. And I take as my counsel on that political pundit Donald Trump. Because when Donald Trump was campaigning for Luther Strange, he did a radio interview in Alabama in which he was asked why he was so big for Luther Strange. And he said, in a rare moment of honesty, that he believed that if Roy Moore was nominated, Roy Moore could lose, whereas he was quite sure that if Luther Strange was nominated, the fall race was over. I think he's right. Remember, Roy Moore, when he was running just a few years ago for Supreme Court, barely won.
Yeah, 52-48.
Right. It was a close race. And in Alabama, when Democrats are getting to 48%, they're doing really well. So Roy Moore had vulnerabilities going into this race. And Doug Jones is really one of the most impressive recruits as a Senate candidate in the South in a very, very long time.
Have you got any sign that the Democrats are going to make a serious effort now?
Yeah, I think here's the interesting thing. There's some argument that the Democrats have been kind of making a relatively serious effort even before this, but doing it in a careful way,
mm-hmm.
not wanting the National Democratic Party with, mm-hmm. you know, what might be seen as its liabilities in Alabama being in the forefront of the race, kind of giving a lot of, you know, background support. But letting
Trump come on now. Pelosi goes to Mobile. Schumer... Schumer goes to Huntsville. Come on.
Yeah, how could you do better? Right? Yeah. But you know, Biden did go in for Jones. Biden's done events down there for Jones.
there's other things that have been happening. So there's some argument that there was a sort of a consciousness of the possibility for a while, and that's right. But here's the reality now. This race is real, and it's in play. And if Democrats don't go all in at this point, if they don't, you know, recognize it, they're going to blow it. And the reason they would blow it is this. From here on out, Roy Moore is going to argue that the National Democratic Party is, and the media and everybody's trying to take him down, right? That's going to be his argument no matter what. Jones will argue that's not the case, that, you know, Jones is a native son of Alabama with an incredible record in the law and other areas. But because of what Moore will be arguing and the way that it will be done, at this point, it would be absurd for the Democrats not to provide the backing and support. That doesn't mean you send, you know, Chuck Schumer in or whoever. What it means is resources, strategy, because this vote on December 12th is going to become huge. It's going to dominate cable television as well as much of our media. Whole country is going to be watching it,
well,
right?
We've kind of neglected to say that there's been one scandal after another with Roy Moore in this race, and his basically sham charity that he was living off of, tax evasion possibly. There's been one thing after another. His son. There's been one crazy thing after another with this guy, and we find out that in fact that he led the effort to keep segregation in the Constitution of Alabama. I mean, that should help.
By the way, they won.
They won barely, but with his help, they won. Right. Well, let's talk about what happened in New Jersey and Virginia and New York. This is Brian Williams leading off his newscast on election night.
Well, good evening once again from our NBC News headquarters here in New York. Day 292 of the Trump administration. 1 year ago tonight, it was the eve of the presidential election. Tonight was election night in races around this country, and one big one in particular. And here's the theory. If you believe that voters in Virginia voted for governor today with a wider message in mind, then tonight was a very bad night for the Trump-controlled Republican Party and a very good night for a Democratic Party in search of good news. Ralph Northam, the Democrat, is celebrating an easier-than-expected victory. He is governor-elect of the Commonwealth of Virginia, defeating the Republican Ed Gillespie, the former GOP party chair, now turned away in two major elections for Senate and governor. While traveling halfway around the world, the president rushed to distance himself from Gillespie, writing on Twitter from South Korea that, quote, Ed Gillespie worked hard but did not embrace me or what I stand for. And that is partially true. Gillespie didn't let Trump anywhere near him, but ran a campaign fueled and tinged by Trumpism. Here is a little bit of what Northam said at his victory speech in the last hour.
You know, it was said that the eyes of the nation are now on the Commonwealth. Today, Virginians have answered and have spoken. Virginia has told us to end the divisiveness, that we will not condone hatred and bigotry, and to end the politics that have torn this country apart.
All right. Your thoughts on the election?
It's a pretty amazing night. I did not anticipate that it would be a night of such clear signals. I thought there was a very good chance that Democrats would do better, that they would retake New Jersey, and that's a big deal. The state of New Jersey is now under unified Democratic control, going into all sorts of debates on economics, social policy.
Possibly a Senate seat.
What?
Possibly a Senate seat.
And even gerrymandering in the future, not gerrymandering, but redistricting, all the issues related to that. So there's one. I've figured that most of the mayoralties would go to Democrats. I thought Virginia was in play, especially at the gubernatorial level, that there might be sort of an unspoken or hidden vote for Ed Gillespie, the Republican who was sort of combining a mainstream Republican message in Northern Virginia with a Trump-like message in much of the rest of the state. And I thought, you know, that could be in play. And just so generally, I thought it might be a mixed night. What you got was a remarkable night. And this is something that people need to take in. If you look across the whole map of the country, especially at the races that didn't get as much coverage, what you see is an incredible pattern of rejection of Trump and Trumpism by people who didn't aggressively reject last year. Now, you know that all the people who despise Trump, obviously they were out opposing him and stuff like that. But what was significant is you look at the pattern of voting in suburban areas, some of which split kind of closely on Trump, some of which even supported him. The level of opposition in key suburban areas.
Loudoun County.
Not just, well, I'm talking Virginia.
Yeah.
I agree. But also suburban areas of New York State, where you saw Westchester and Nassau County.
Right. County Republican incumbents up.
Voted out.
And New York City had not reelected a Democratic mayor since 1985. You know, John Hallman sort of dismissed de Blasio's big victory. But the truth is, New York's, de Blasio got off to a shaky start. New York City's had plenty of Republican mayors.
Well, in fact, they had them in a pattern for a number of years. And then, but here's where it gets interesting. Suburban Philadelphia.
Right.
Now you're getting into states that were battleground states in 2016. Suburban Philadelphia saw incredible advances for the Democrats. Then, you know, go all the way out to Washington State. You know, yes, it's true that with the election of Phil Murphy in New Jersey, you got unified Democratic control of New Jersey. But with the special election for a single state Senate seat in Washington State, which was a really incredible battle, Democrats won the seat. They got control of the state Senate. They now have unified control of Washington State. Now, you understand, for a Democratic Party that has been, you know, skidding downwards in the states, you know, really put in a tough position at the state level, to split two states in an off-year election, and then going back to Virginia to have the potential that the Democrats could flip control, not of the state assembly,
right,
but their equivalent of state assembly.
Pretty incredible moment. I got to wrap it up early today because I got another interview to record, but I thank you, and we will get further into these elections as we kind of digest all this. Pretty incredible moment in America. John Nichols from the Capital Times and The Nation with us at SlysOffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers.
SlysOffice.com.
Thanks a million.
Bye-bye.
You know, we work hard every day in mills and mines, hospitals and schools, in office buildings, pharmacies and shipyards, factories and forests, in squad cars, ambulances and taxicabs. We do all kinds of jobs in Iowa, Wisconsin, Illinois, and all across the United States and Canada. We build the things that build our country. We do things that keep our country going, support our families and our communities. We have the courage to stand up even when no one else does. We have the strength to fight for what's right, for our families and for yours. We're your friends, your neighbors, your sisters and brothers. We're more than 1 million members strong. We stand in solidarity with workers in every continent on the globe. We're the United Steelworkers Union, and every day we fight for you. Please join our fight. Visit usw.org or like us at facebook.com/steelworkers.